Well, we know it's been wet and wild and crazy out there, but the sun's out today. It's going to rain again tomorrow. I don't know what's going to happen next. I do know one thing. Rain or shine, sleet, snow, hail, if they've got power, there's one place in Chico that has shelter, food, water, beer, wine, and happy hour. That's the Handlebar.
Yeah, they're located at 2070 East 20th Street on the south end of town here in Chico. They've been longtime advertisers here on our show. We stand by them. I was there within the past week.
We'll always be there within the next week.
It's a great beer selection. Yeah, like you said, they've got a beautiful indoor, beautiful outdoor situation. Regardless of what the weather's doing, you can count on great beers, especially during their happy hour. Like you said, Johnny, 7 days a week, 2 to 6 p.m., a dollar off any of those draft beers. Again, that's the Handlebar, 2070 East 20th Street. Go check them out, and here's our show.
Why don't we begin?
Report to that.
We hope you enjoy.
This is Fresh Hop Cinema.
Hey, and welcome to Fresh Hop Cinema. This is a podcast and a radio show about craft beer and film. My name's Max Minardi.
And I'm Johnny Summers. Hello.
This week on the show, we're covering Monkey Man. Came out this year. It's a film directed, and of course starring show favorite, and I think objectively one of the best actors working today, Dev Patel. It's a revenge flick in the spirit of John Wick. If John Wick had any intellectual or spiritual subtext to impart upon its viewers, I'm sorry I wrote this intro before I knew what I know. It came to theaters last weekend with an 88% of Rotten Tomatoes critics finding the film fresh and 12% of critics being not good at their job and having no sense of art. But before we give you our thoughts on that, agreeing or not, here's the beers we are reviewing this week to lubricate our conversation.
Lubricate, yep. Yeah, new words right. Great. There. Two beers this week from McElhenney Brewing out of Alpine, California. First one is called Parallel Paradise. It's a double dry hopped West Coast IPA that clocks at 6.9%. The second one is called Bourbon Barrel Aged Molotov Special. It is a Russian Imperial Stout, like I said, that was aged in barrels of some sort.
You need to clarify what I thought was going to happen on this show today, because the notes, the portion that you did with the beers, I was like, what are we drinking?
Molotov Special's Juicy IPA.
Yeah, because that's what he wrote. He wrote a Molotov Special Juicy IPA 13.5%. And I was like, I guess I don't know beer. I have never heard of such a thing.
Right?
What are these beers? Yeah.
So, yeah, those are the two. We got them. I got them while I was down working in Roseville. These were purchased at Final Gravity Tap Room and Beer Shop, one of the finest establishments in the area. Love those guys. Expectations for the brewery, you ask? Well, they have...
What is this brewery?
It's a new brewery, but it's not a new brewery. It's a new brewery in name, and they have been making beer for quite some time. So the family originally started out as Alpine Brewing.
I recall Alpine.
Yeah.
We've done Alpine on the show.
Yeah, great beers. Loved Alpine. And then they... I believe sold to, I want to say, Green Flash.
Okay.
There was a cell. There was some things. They didn't make beer. Now they're making beer again.
Great.
And they're still in Alpine, California, but they're going with the family name versus a new name for the brewery. So,
which is, again,
McElhenney.
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 Okay, great.
Yep. And yes, first timers on the show by this name.
Fair enough. Long line of McElhenneys in history we might touch on a little bit later. If you are listening on KZFR 90.1 FM, we hope you're having a terrific Saturday afternoon. On the radio version of our show today, you'll be hearing the majority of our episode, which will eventually include spoilers for Monkey Man. If you haven't seen the film yet and you don't want it spoiled, I'd encourage you to go see more movies when they come out. But if that's not your thing, you can always go see the movie at your leisure and then come back and listen to our show in its entirety in podcast form. That version of the show includes Hot and Bothered, which is a segment exclusive to podcast listeners. It's how we end the show each week, by giving Johnny a free pass for expressing himself and me a break from hovering over the bleep button.
Mm-hmm. That's right. To find the episode in its entirety, go search for Fresh Hop Cinema on Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, all those major platforms. We've released new episodes every Friday since 2016, which means, since you're hearing this on a Saturday, it's available to all of you listening on KZFR right now.
Mm-hmm.
If you like the show, go take 5 seconds out of your busy day and leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, and definitely let us know you did that. You're going to want to text us to either brag about you doing that 5-star thing, or with feedback about the show, maybe some beers we need to try, a movie we should watch, how right we are, how wrong we are. You get the idea.
Sure.
Text us all your innermost thoughts at 530-433-0839. Again, the podcast phone number is 530-433-0839. To hang out with us on social media, just search Fresh Hop Cinema on whatever app you happen to be on. We're probably there. Those include Instagram, Facebook, Letterboxd, or Untappd. Or just head over to our website, freshhopcinema.com.
Yeah, you can also find us on OnlyFans at Fresh Hop Cinema, or you can go to Patreon and find us, patreon.com/freshhopcinema, back to the normal podcast name, which is how we keep our show running. Mm-hmm. It's how we get away with making dumb puns that we think of in the moment like that.
Yeah.
And for as little as a dollar per week, you can have access to bonus content, like when we get back from the West Coast and bring a beer and a crowler and talk about it from a brewery that we've never talked about on the show before. It's also how you get invites to events like our bar hang on the 22nd. That's all I'm going to say for now, because again, it's exclusive to Patreon people only. We've been doing Patreon basically since we started the show. So we have bonus episodes in varying levels of professionalism that we've put out over the past 7 or so years. I stand by every single one, though I will say, if you are particularly married to how we've been doing them in the past couple of years, you might not necessarily love them in the early days. Or if you're a real fan, you'll love them no matter what.
That's fair.
Because you love us.
It's been a gamut.
Yeah, it really has. But anyways, that's patreon.com/freshhopcinema. If you have a buck or two a month, we sure would appreciate your help. Because maybe one day we'll actually have a beer cellar to go down and fish these out of, rather than a very cute lunchbox that you brought today.
Thanks.
But I think that's it. Do we have anything else that we need to talk about for the show or regarding Patreon?
I think we're all there.
Okay, then Patreon out of the way. Johnny Summers, what are we drinking?
So the first beer from McElhinney Brewing is Parallel Paradise, the double dry hopped West Coast IPA, 6.9%. It's been double dry hopped with Strata, Mosaic, Citra, and Simcoe. And this is a collab with Burgeon Beer Company.
Burgeon Beer Company.
Okay. Hard work, good beer. McElhinney Brewing, true family craft. Proudly crafted in Alpine, California. They got a lot of catchphrases.
Yeah, I think that's important. They're probably on all their stickers too.
I'm going to go ahead and just take a big step back and read what they have on the can. Great. Because it's not just those hops. Their website was a little antiquated, so we're going to go with CGX Strata, Strata, Citra Mosaic, Cryo Citra, Cryo Mosaic, and Cryo Simcoe.
All right. That's a lot of hops.
Yeah.
This could be dangerous. If you don't know Burgeon Beer Co., they came about in 2016. They've done a lot of stuff. Their website's actually very, very thorough, if I may be so bold. Thanks, dude. I appreciate it.
I love a good, thorough brewery website. Well,
I do, too, because we've talked about this ad nauseum. Like, there's just some breweries that are like,
should know you're going to be on our podcast.
Yeah, you should know you're going to be on here. You're fine. That's why I told you we have the bleep button. But the other point that I want to make is Burgeon is down in Carlsbad. So we have geographical pinpoints now.
Cool.
Okay.
Then Alpine's SoCal. They're down that way too, right?
Could be.
I don't know where Alpine is.
No, you're right. It is.
It's got to be.
What's in the glasses visually? What do you see?
Definitely beer, which is a great sign. It is real light. Looks almost more lagery than IPA. So
it helps that we've just done an extra beer review prior to this that we recorded for Patreon.
The color of the finest toasted caramel.
Well, right. So we actually still have more of mine, and it's rare that this happens. But yeah, these are very starkly different beers, and I think they're made, and I'm not sure because I haven't tasted or smelled it yet. But there's a case to be made not only in the flavor profiles differing between old school and new school West Coast IPAs, but certainly visually. So when you think of something from, you know, OG stone beers or Lagunitas or Sierra Nevada, you think more of sort of this amber copper hue. And then when you think of like, I don't know, who's cranking out innovation in the IPA game these days?
IPA wise, man, Slice
Green Cheek, California,
Green Cheek, totally. Alvarado Street.
Any number of Portland breweries that are doing the thing, they look a lot more like the beer that we have just poured. And I think it's a really nice visual distinction to be able to notice.
Totally. Old school, new school.
Totally.
Right there.
You've tried it.
Yeah.
In a moment. In fact, now, would you tell me what you think?
Well, man, it's punchy and bright. That's the first thing I noticed right off the bat, how really tropical it is. More tropical than I was expecting. It's, you know, that double dry hopping, man, makes it all punchy and wild. And it's robust with flavor. It's definitely not one-dimensional, man. It's full of tropical juicy notes, but it's got some nice hoppiness on the end. It was real cold when I busted it out. I just want to let it open up by being warm just a little bit longer. But First impression, good. Crisp, refreshing, biting, tropical,
yep.
Bitter, a little bit of a dry finish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with all that. It's also, on top of that, for better or for worse, not terribly surprising. Mm-hmm. Nothing's groundbreaking here.
No.
It's a well-made, to some extent, it's not incredibly well-made. Like, it's good.
Solid.
Very well-rounded. You get the punch from the hops, for sure. You get a dry finish, which I also really like. Yeah, I don't know, it's six. You said 6.9. Is that about right? Yeah, it feels like 6.9. It's not surprising me there either. I would have been shocked if this were 8.
Totally.
But there's beers out there that are dropping that double IPA fire and mm-hmm. not tasting like it.
Yeah.
This on the palate earns that 6.9. Feels right where it should be. First drink for me is very, very solid. Nothing to write home about yet.
Yeah. No, but I like it. But I agree. It's very solid. Not life-changing. Yeah, this isn't going to break any records for me score-wise. It's very well crafted, though. I like it. It's a good first impression. The only gripe I probably have so far is it's a little sweet.
Sweetness.
Sweet, yeah, on the front.
For sure, dude. Same. Yeah, I'd say it's almost more than a little sweet. On my second drink, it was like, oh.
Yeah.
No, there that is.
Yeah.
And perhaps it's because, well, I don't know. When you tried it first, it, like you said, it was probably a little bit colder. Mm-hmm. And then mine's been sitting out for about the same time, but I didn't drink it as fast as you did. So no, it's been sweet. And I bet you, because you've got like an ounce and a half left in your glass, mm-hmm. it's going to be... I bet if you were to make your rating now, that beer would be safer than if you rate it after drinking one more.
Yep.
But here he goes anyways. And we'll see how that sweetness hits the back of the tongue. And I'm guessing a little heavy.
Yeah. The sweetness that kind of marries with the punchy, almost, it's not like a muddled bitterness, but it's not like
it's musty.
It's musty. It's a musty, earthy bitterness. It's not sharp or crisp. It's got squishy edges, and I don't love that.
I don't know why my brain conjures this when I taste these things happening, but this happens a lot where you'll have a pointy hop sharpness trying to claw its way out of a bog in mm-hmm. like in like the Princess Bride or something,
right?
Like holding onto the rope.
That was quicksand.
In a bog, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, you know, like, but there was quicksand in the bog. It was very strange.
Oh, I guess you're right. Then let me go ahead and change the film comparison to that scene in A Neverending Story.
Gah.
Although that doesn't, you don't ever get out of that bog, do you?
Well, the horse did.
The horse, that's for sure. Yeah. That's how the hops feel in this. They're struggling to get out of impending doom. Sorry to bring it
drama,
down.
Emotional damage.
And on the other hand, you have this kind of like, or rather, more appropriately, the quicksand, the bog is kind of the musty flavor you're talking about.
Yeah.
And it just feels like these things are fighting constantly, and the hop bitterness almost never wins. And it's just tamped down and ultimately smothered and suffocated and leaves a young child crying.
Yeah. And questioning.
With this dance they're doing.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. It's yeah, the whole combo of that little bit of sweetness with that musty, with the biting tones underneath that are just, could be more prominent. It's just not a good combo.
And I also think it's due in part to the kitchen sink philosophy they have taken with the hops that have been put into this. It's too many things.
It's a lot.
To really appreciate any singular aspect of any of these hops. It's just so much going on.
Is four too many?
I think five's definitely too many. Four, yeah, I'd say four too. Yeah, four's too many.
Okay.
Three is like, that's it. Stop. Mm-hmm. Unless you ever do like the suicide thing on fountain drinks?
Yeah.
It's not like good, but it's fun to do it.
Yeah.
So like I can see that like a brewer doing that. Like, let's put all the hops in.
Right.
And he's been drinking like Mountain Dew Code Red at Taco Bell since he was 12. And he's like, what if we tried 9 hops? Mm-hmm. And everybody else is like, are you sure? He's like, I'm the owner's son. Yeah. You're going to listen to me.
It's going down.
Yeah.
Well, there's only four in this, but.
Are you sure?
Well,
I think you read like seven.
Yeah, there's seven, but they're all cryo versions of the same thing.
Different.
So Citra, different. Citra, cryo, Citra.
People use the cryo versions because they act differently in beer.
Yeah.
That's the extent of knowledge I can provide
to
that.
And they taste fresher.
Right. So like, why not use exclusively cryo or exclusively Citra? Like, I don't know.
All the flavors.
Right. And that's what it ends up. And it ends up tasting like the flavor brown, whatever flavor that is.
Totally.
Whatever flavor your soda becomes.
Yeah.
and it turns the color brown.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's just good.
Like your teeth.
It's like decent.
Yeah. Next time we sit down with any of our brewer buddies, we should ask about that. Just the relationship of hops when it comes to the larger numbers of varieties used and like how that's, you know, equated into a recipe.
Yeah.
It'd be really fascinating.
Here's an idea for a bonus content segment. Here's, I can see it in lights now. Beers with a brewer. And we just buy somebody a drink who makes beer on a sort of reputable professional level. Yeah. And we ask them these dumb questions that we don't know the answers to.
Yeah, we should start a log.
And we are drinking lagers and they are drinking Imperial Stouts.
Obviously.
And we get them a little tipsy. Mm-hmm. Not in like a, they know this is coming. This is a consensual sort of situation, of course.
Right.
But that is what we do.
Okay.
You agree to this?
Yeah.
All right. Who's our first brewer?
I mean, obviously Brian.
Brian McGillivray. Yeah. Sure. Great. Hit him up and we can make that happen.
Let's do it.
Let's rate this beer. I'm going to try it one more time because I'm not quite there yet, but I'm almost ready to rate it. Do you need any more tasting?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm good. It's middle of the road for me. I've had a lot better double IPAs for all the reasons that we've talked about. Just the final product, it's not vibing.
I'm sorry. You can't say double IPA. Double dry hops.
Double dry hop. IPA. Isn't, I thought it was a double.
No. Oh, yeah. No. Yep. Just want to clear that up
once. Yep. Double dry hop single IPA. Yep. Just not my favorite, man. It's, and it just comes down to flavor and preference. The hop profile and the sweetness and the, it's just, it's a kind of a jumbled, not great final product. Again, not the worst beer I've ever had, but not one that I would probably buy again. So for me, it's like a, it's like a 5.2.
Just, yeah, barely above middle.
Okay. Yeah.
Can we take a moment just to sort of appreciate the Alpine of yesteryear?
Mm-hmm.
Because we've done Alpine to the point that they made it into a beer madness bracket that we did.
Yeah.
And for the life of me, I'm not remembering what that beer was, but I think it was Nelson. Does that seem right to you?
I think so. Yeah.
Nelson IPA was like a total, like, you know, like a workhorse of a beer.
Yeah.
I remember at one point I thought that it was like a hazy IPA and then it went back to being a West Coast IPA. Sound right to you?
There was something where they changed a recipe or something.
Okay. But that was kind of like the Alpine beer. And it, for a few years, it was around everywhere. Like I saw it at bottle shops. I saw it on draft at places around town here in Chico, California. I don't know. Maybe this is still in line with the quality of those beers. I'm not sure. But I like it as well. For me, it's a 5. It's right up the middle. I think it's a solid beer. I'd be happy to drink it again. Probably wouldn't seek it out, but I enjoy it. And if you're not going to do it, I'll finish what's in the can.
You go for it.
That's where we're at. Anything else about this at all, Johnny Summers?
No. I think we've said our piece.
All right. Once again, you're listening to Fresh Hop Cinema. If you've tried anything from McElhenney or perhaps back in the day, Alpine Brewing, and you couldn't agree or disagree more with Johnny's evaluation or mine, please get in touch. Let us know. You can leave a voicemail or actually just go ahead and send a text. 530-433-0839. We do love feedback, even if it's correcting Johnny on saying something about, oh, that wasn't a CGI fight in Roadhouse. That was a very exclusive multi-camera, never been done before thing that we'll talk about later.
We'll fight that battle to my grave.
That number is 530-433-0839. And hey, if you like the show, help us out. Please leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts.
Do it. It only takes a couple seconds and it will make us happy. I mean, you don't need any more reasons than that.
Yeah.
But if you do, it also helps people discover the show, which is what this is about.
Yep.
We're trying to start a movement.
We're trying to become viral, baby.
Yeah. No, we're trying to become...
What's that guy from Monkey Man?
Dominating.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm going to run for office.
Yeah. I want disciples. I want followers. I want robes. I want beads. It's going to be great. All right. Next is a trailer for Monkey Man, so don't go anywhere.
Close your eyes. And you will find yourself.
When I was a boy, my mother used to tell me a story of a demon king and his army. They brought fire and terror to the land. Until they faced the protector of the people, the white monkey.
You are a beast.
In this city, the rich don't see us as people.
Give me the job no one wants to do.
I'll do it.
Anyone who forgets their place, it doesn't turn out well for them.
This is not the place to work if you can't handle that sort of stuff. Every day, I've prayed for a way to protect the weak.
I've got an answer to every prayer. I call on Nikki.
Minaj, big bumper, nice headlights. Let's boogie.
You need to fight for your mother, for all of us.
Anger will not quiet your soul, my son.
Don't call me son.
It's time to remember who you are. But only love kills more when will they learn? Just one small ember can burn down everything.
Mario.
Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready for a fight?
1, 2, 3.
Just joining us, you're listening to Fresh Hop Cinema, a show about the worlds of craft beer and film. If you're listening on the radio waves of KZFR 90.1 FM, you're sadly going to be missing out. So you should listen to the podcast version because there's more. There's so much more. If you want to hear the whole episode, go subscribe to Fresh Hop Cinema on Apple Podcasts or wherever quality podcasts are found by you. It's currently available for your streaming pleasure. So at the end of this, if you're just dying to know what all the hot and bothered fuss is about, please go download that podcast episode and have a listen.
From Letterboxd, one small ember can burn down everything. Kid, an anonymous young man who ekes out a meager living in an underground fight club where night after night wearing a gorilla mask, it's a monkey mask. Is a gorilla a monkey? This isn't part of the thing. Okay. Is a gorilla a monkey, Johnny?
I'm not going to say yes or no to that. I'm not a molecular microbiologist.
I don't think you have to go that deep on it.
I don't know, man.
Maybe it is. Forget it. I'll keep reading. He is beaten bloody by more popular fighters for cash. After years of suppressed rage, Kid discovers a way to infiltrate the enclave of the city's sinister elite. As his childhood drama boils over, his mysteriously scarred hands unleash an explosive campaign of retribution to settle the score with men who took everything from him. Again, Monkey Man was directed by Dev Patel. It was partially written by Dev Patel alongside Paul Anguinoela and John Coley. It stars Dev Patel as Kid, as Monkey Man, as Bobby, though I think he just took that from a bottle of bleach that was in front of him because he wants to stay anonymous. Bear with me on this next part. It also stars Sikander Kher, who plays Rana Singh. He's a dirty cop working for higher-ups that we will learn more about throughout the course of the two-hour movie. Peter Bosch is in this as Alfonso. He's a guy that works in this establishment who has lost a leg for some reason and really seems to be enjoying the high life despite clearly not being a part of that society. Mm-hmm. Vipin Sharma shows up as Alpha, who is the main guru of a sanctuary of people who are being persecuted by some of the political figures currently trying to gain more power.
Okay.
And then I also want to mention Sobita Duipala. She plays Sita. She is a, I don't want to say prostitute because that doesn't quite feel right. She's a high-end escort who comes probably from very little money and makes a living pleasing rich men.
Yeah, she for sure got trafficked.
Yeah, for sure. There's a lot. We'll get into it. Mm-hmm. This came to theaters on April 5th, but before that, it premiered at South by Southwest on March 11th. Like I said, it's about 2 hours, 2 hours and 1 minute specifically. Johnny, thoughts on Dev Patel as an actor?
Love him.
Great.
Love him to pieces.
What do you think of when you think of
Lion?
Oh, really? That's your go-to? Oh, for me, it's The Newsroom.
Okay. He's great in that as well.
And then after that, it's Green Knight.
Yeah. That's fair.
Yeah.
All memorable performances.
For sure. This is good. I saw your mouth move.
No, go ahead.
Okay. His first director, this is his directorial debut.
Yeah.
What did you think of Monkey Man?
So this one was tough for me. I really went in wanting to like it.
Sure.
I had high hopes, but also low expectations for someone who I respect as an actor who is taking their first swing at directing.
Okay.
And also directing yourself, which is wild.
It's a move.
It's a real move. Whether it was a good move or not, I don't know about that. I had a lot of problems with this movie in the first and second act, structurally, with some of the plot, the writing, big pacing issues for me in the first two acts, and the brass tacks of the cinematography and some of the choices that were made with framing were distracting to the point of being overused, to the point of being so distracting that it took me out of it. And the pacing I speak about is this movie felt like with the first two acts, it really had two gears. It was either so still, like nothing. You're just so still. It's contemplative. Nothing's happening.
Sure.
Or frenetic, just mayhem. Really, really strong third act. There's a turning point in this film with the training montage, and that's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
And I think basically from that point on, the movie became a bit more cohesive, and it kind of the parts came together most effectively in the third act. So lots of problems with the first and second act. Many times I felt a little bored. It was a little distracting how slow-paced it was.
Including the first act?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and there was...
All right, I can see that.
And there was some redundancies with flashbacks that felt overused that really kind of took me out of it. I thought they could have made some different choices that would have made the sum of the parts a lot better.
Okay.
Overall, Dev Patel carried a lot of the weight on this movie on his shoulders. Mm-hmm. I love the intensity that he brings, especially in the third act. So much acting he does is on a small scale just with his eyes.
His freaking eyes, dude.
Oh, my God. I could stare at that man all day.
I know.
And the cinematography had some of its high points in the third act, right? There was a scene where he gets out of an elevator and it's just red behind him. And it is
great shot.
One of my favorite shots of a movie this year, probably.
There's a shot where he kicks people, but he's like in front, backlit by a bar of whiskey.
Yeah.
So Sharon Mir, by the way, is the cinematographer.
Nice. Great. So didn't love his work. Most of it.
Okay, but sometimes.
So sometimes. Like he had really shining moments and then moments that were just so all over the place in a mess and also way too zoomed in. Like the whole close-up thing that just got beat to death whole movie.
Okay, all right. Like, that's how you saw his eyes.
Like everyone in every frame. Go back and watch this movie. It's just distracting.
All right.
I don't know what that dude has against people's chins and foreheads, but he was trying to cut them out.
Just nose the whole nose movie. The eyebrows.
And it was so distracting and it made me blood red mad.
All right.
I love the messages of representation and inclusivity that this movie brings to the table. I think that's awesome. I think those things can be fantastic while also the movie that they are in not necessarily be that great. I don't think the two things are
fair enough.
You know,
you're saying you hate trans people.
Stop it. No. Yeah. So some big problems, some real high points, real mixed feelings on this one. Love Dev Patel. Overall, pretty lukewarm on it, man.
All right.
Gonna be honest.
Out of 10, Johnny.
It's like a 6.4.
I thought you were going to go lower.
No.
Okay. I'm
firm but fair, man.
I'm with you. Dev Patel, great. I'm in favor of him trying to direct the movie. And I think he achieved that. He technically did direct this movie.
Yes.
It's a revenge story for sure, which is not a new template necessarily. Something bad happens in his childhood and he seeks out vengeance. I don't think that the Letterboxd synopsis set this up particularly well. He seeks out vengeance on those people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all very calculated. He has sort of a grand scheme air about him where he's like, this happens and then this happens. There's a scene in the beginning where he needs a purse from a club owner. Mm-hmm. And he uses like a network of people to get that purse. Like,
that was annoyingly long.
It was too many handoffs
for sure.
Scene
was so
it was, there was even one point where like three people in a row was like, to you. It's like, give it to the, we don't need that.
Yeah.
Give it, just pass it one extra person.
Mm-hmm.
but I like the idea of it. It's a movie that has been compared a lot to John Wick for some of the frenetic action in it, which I think is apt. But also, like I said in the intro, like there's more to this movie on a thematic and philosophical and even spiritual level than John Wick, which I think is great because it gives you something as an audience member to chew on. Mm-hmm. I think performance-wise, Dev Patel does a great job. Like you're saying, his eye work is he carries the pain of a thousand generations in his eyes.
The subtlety in his acting, incredible.
The physicality of his performance is great, on par with I would say any mainstream American actor work. I mean, he's an American actor, but like, you know, like white Hollywood actor that you think of when you think of like 80s action. We're coming off of Roadhouse, so I'm thinking of like all of that kind of
energy.
Yeah. Like I think he does as good a job and weasels his way into that.
Totally.
Which I think might be some of the reason the 12% of people who do not give this a great rating, like below 50%, don't like it. It challenges a Hollywood status quo. Not just with him, but like what you're talking about, like the inclusivity of some of the stuff that goes on, which we'll talk about in the Danger Zone. Mm-hmm. I give major points to Big Swings for auteur sort of artistic motives. And I think this movie has that. I really dug it. There's some problems. I didn't find the pacing problems you found, which is unusual for us. Usually I think we're on the same page with that. Mm-hmm. The movie starts very fast, kind of. If you break it down by act, I would say first act, fast. Second act, slow. Third act, fast, which is kind of a nice little subversion. It's usually almost always the opposite. Mm-hmm. I really dug it, dude. I'd be happy to watch it again. I just like soaking up that ambiance. Some pretty great needle drops, some great comedic moments. I'd say five of them maybe throughout the whole movie, but they work. Mm-hmm. It's like an 8 for me.
Okay.
Yeah, really, really liked it. That's where I'm at.
Right on, man. I like it.
You want to just jump straight into spoilers?
Let's do it.
Okay. That is going to be your final warning. Once again, if you have thoughts on anything we've discussed on the show today so far, please do get in touch. Like we've said, ad nauseum, you can text or call us at 530-433-0839 or just send a good old-fashioned email to fhccast@gmail.com. One more time, when we come back, we'll be discussing Monkey Man with spoilers. So if you haven't seen it yet, consider this your second-to-last warning. Please don't touch that dial if you're on the radio. We'll be right back with the Danger Zone.
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 Welcome to the Danger Zone, where we will be spoiling if we decide it is worthwhile.
Yeah.
Monkey
there's,
Man.
There's definitely things that are going to come up that are I wouldn't want to hear before I saw it, whether that's spoilery to the whole plot or just.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. You took issue, if your eyes tell true, with me saying it started fast, got slow, and got fast again.
Yeah, I felt like the first act wasn't even all that fast.
Once the action hits, dude,
yeah,
it goes.
But if you rewatch it, the first act was sporadic with action. It wasn't really steady, and the moments between those punctuations are really what slowed it down.
No, wait. I have a different memory of this. It starts kind of slow. You get a lot of him as a kid, mm-hmm. kind of. A
little bit.
And then whatever he goes and like you see the fighting stuff, which is like action-y, but it's not like murder action.
Yeah, no.
And then we like get to the first where he tries to assassinate the dude. Assassinate's not the right word. Murder the guy. Mm-hmm. Then it's action up until the point that he gets shot, that's falls true. Off the bridge. Like it's nonstop. At that point in the theater today, I was like, oh, like this is the movie. I guess we're just watching more like high adrenaline, which is cool. Mm-hmm. I'm into it. But I was so surprised when we got that sort of almost like monastic kind of break, and he gets to train kind of, not with, but like
at
around. Yeah, yeah. These,
well, he had a drummer.
What did you think of the drumming as a method of training montage? Silly, but effective or just silly?
Well, I mean, a lot of people will like hit a heavy bag with a metronome.
Sure.
So, I mean, it makes sense.
As long as you don't fight a musician, that's a great fighting technique.
Totally.
Because otherwise you're like, dodge.
Well, this guy's rhythm is so predictable. Right. He's in 4-4. What is happening? Uh-huh. No, it was a bit cringy at first. And that character that played the kind of bongo situation.
Oh, I don't have that person's name at all.
It's fine. But in the first scene that we see them, it was so cringe.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You mean the storytelling scene?
Didn't love that at
I
all.
Loved that scene.
Hated it.
Dude, for those that haven't seen it, we're around like a campfire for some reason. A bunch of people.
It's where they're having dinner.
Yeah. And the drummer is has like a deep drum and then like a higher drum.
And then and says a little like, thing that makes it go boing.
And a wife. And I think very musically they illustrate an argument, a love tale that ultimately ends in failure of these two people who break up. I thought it was a clever way of kind of setting the stage for what to expect from percussion becoming part of like the film. I thought it would go away after that, but he brought it back, which I thought was nice.
Yeah.
A little too much, but still mm-hmm. it worked for me.
Yeah. Didn't love it.
All right. What about, I mean, you mentioned, I jotted down a couple things. You mentioned representation, inclusivity.
Mm-hmm.
I like that this movie can be watched through a number of lenses. Like certainly spirituality is one, or on another hand, like the dangers of incorporating religious beliefs into politics mm-hmm. would be one. Another one would be like transgender identity would mm-hmm. be a huge one.
Yeah.
What were you meaning when you said that?
A little bit of the fact that Dev Patel does not look like the atypical action star.
He does look like the atypical action star. He does not look like the typical.
Yeah. Right.
I know what you mean.
Was he born in – he's of Indian descent, correct?
I don't know. I know that a lot of – I really just know Dev Patel through his work.
Patel is a very Indian last name. He's been an
outspoken – yes. And Dev is a very Indian first name.
Yeah.
The fact that he made such waves with Lion, which is a story about Indian adoption, for one, adoption of Indian children into, mm-hmm. I think, Australia it was.
Yeah.
I can find out for you.
Yeah, I'd be curious. But love seeing him in this role. Like, I think that's a flipping on its head of longstanding norms that yeah. doesn't.
Oh, and we're forgetting about Slumdog Millionaire. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Very, very much an Indian movie.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. But, like, that's a norm that doesn't need be there. You know what I mean? I think if the action's believable, the choreography's good, throw anyone in that role. Like, look at Atomic Blonde. Love that movie.
Sure.
It was rad.
Sure.
Again, maybe not loved, but
I like that movie a lot. It was entertaining. A
serviceable fun movie. Action movie with yeah. a strong, badass female lead.
Yes.
Like, excellent, right?
Yeah.
So I love that. And I love Dev Patel. And I think he brings that charisma and that smolder and just the level of acting. And also didn't know that he had this level of physicality. Let's be real, dude. He got cut up for this movie.
He was in such great shape.
Our boy Dev is chiseled.
Glowed up. And also to close this loop, no, he was born in the UK. He's a British mm-hmm. Fella. But I think his parents, were from India.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken.
Nice. It makes sense. There's a lot of Indian immigrants in the UK.
Yeah, totally. And in this particular neighborhood, we don't need to read his whole Wikipedia page, but yes, they immigrated to that area, which is very predominantly Indian. And he went on to do a whole lot of stuff. And a lot of stuff that we haven't even mentioned.
So yet. I love that. I love seeing him in this role because I've really enjoyed him in literally everything I've ever seen him in.
Yeah, like, he doesn't miss.
He's one of those guys so that good. Right now is not missing.
Yep.
Almost... like Sam Rockwell's almost in that category. That's another conversation.
Yep, it is. But that would be a fun conversation.
Yeah, it's close. He's close. He's two movies away.
Sure.
From being really in there for me.
Yeah.
But I love that. And also the rep, like the trans visibility.
Yeah.
Like that was so amazing. That fight scene where the dresses were spinning and like there was a really heavy metalcore song. That was my favorite scene in the movie.
It has to be.
I was like, this is
your, it has
this
to is be your
penultimate.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is fantastic. We have, it seems reductive, but it's sure. so like men in dresses, which they're not, you know, it's hard to say.
Dude, I would say
they're not clearly defined.
The scene kind of plays that way, which is actually my only issue with kind of watching it through that lens, which is that they make a clear point that the person who is running for whatever office it is very much like trying to extinguish anybody who doesn't fit their idealistic sort of, I don't know, demographic.
Mm-hmm.
And they are doing that in part by utilizing this religious figure's sort of followers. What is it? Disciples, he mm-hmm. even calls them. So we, you know, when Dev Patel is rescued, he's sort of taken in by these marginalized people who are these transgender people who have like a monastery. I'm not clear on this. Like,
yeah, it's like a temple. It's they're like a protected temple.
Yeah, but they're also like fighters. Like, I'm not clear on that part. Or did they just rise to the occasion and show up? But they were like good fighters.
Yeah.
And that scene very much plays like it's people taking off their costumes. Like now, like, and it feels very masculine.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I'm not well-versed enough in this to say if that's missing the mark, but it felt inconsistent with the spirit in which that monastery was intended to be portrayed.
Well, I mean, yeah, we can't really assume because it was never super clarified, like how they identify. So it's not like we're not putting someone in a box that's – there was no box that they put in.
The only bit of evidence against that is that there's like a background thing that happens on like a newsreel in the TV where they specifically say the news anchor, who we don't even see, it's like showing a wide shot of people in like a – cage or something. It's like, this person's going after transgender people. They say that on the thing. I was like, okay, like that's the point.
Yeah, but that's the news.
That's a good point. But it's the news in a movie that's trying to portray a certain idea.
Well, I felt like it was, but it's also, there was a lot of propaganda being presented.
That's true.
That could have been an angle. It doesn't super matter. I mean, they could have been very gender fluid. I mean, there was a statue in their monastery of a half man, half woman, which would indicate some gender fluidity.
Totally.
So
you go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. So it whether they were, however they identified, they were pretty kick butt.
I know. Say.
Like,
that scene is so good.
It's so good.
This isn't the point, and I said this to Serena after we left the movie. We saw it, a few hours ago. But, like, the training montage was fun. Very cool.
I was hoping for a training montage.
I just don't totally understand, and it's not the point, but, like, he, like, is learning to punch bags in rhythm and then becomes really good with knives. Like, really good. Mm-hmm. I was like, how did you figure this out? Yep. Were you holding back? Was that, like, the breakthrough?
Not just knives. Like, full-on, like, mixed martial arts, kung fu.
Like, doing great. And I could I could buy that because, like, he's done the cage – or not the cage fighting, but, like, the underground fight circuit.
Yeah.
But, like, you're not using knives until they throw you a spiked bat, which I thought was wild.
Yeah, that was a move. Didn't love that.
No. So I don't know if, like, I could have used more of the training montage.
Right.
I think. Like, just to be a little bit more extensive.
Make it more believable.
Totally.
Yeah.
I just want to skim my notes again here really quick. You said distracting framing. You specifically said framing. What did you mean?
Dude, it was like the whole movie, you're watching it like on your computer or a phone and you just zoomed in way too much.
Oh, okay. Just the shots.
It was the literal framing of people. And it was very rare that there was the top of a person's head or their jaw. It was so close up.
All right.
For so long, it became distracting. And once I saw it, I couldn't unsee it.
It's like hearing somebody say like a lot and you're just like, I keep hearing it.
Yeah.
I didn't have that problem in this movie, but I could see that being a problem.
Dude, it drove me up a wall.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, fair enough. The last thing you mentioned was, which I thought was interesting, you mentioned the third act was good, following not such a great first and second, which I think is pretty rare in movies. Like, I can't think of a movie where it not that it won you over, but, like, usually if a movie's first and second act in a traditional three-act structure are bad, the third act doesn't get better.
Right.
It's weird that this one did for you.
Yeah,
and I'm wondering super strong why. Finish. Like, why?
It felt like it established its identity, like what it was trying to be, it fulfilled in the third act.
What do you think that identity was?
You know, it was the revenge action flick, and it was not, you know, it leaned more on the revenge action, the fast pace, and it relied less on all the backstory and the slow periods. I think if you had a more consistent pacing of this movie, it would have been a better finished product. And I think the pacing picked up and maintained in the third act, which made it feel cohesive and enjoyable as a viewer.
Like, that's valid. Are you glad that he killed the religious figure at the end?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. You have to. I think, personal feelings aside, I think to complete this character's arc, that's what has to happen.
Yeah, unless they're setting up for a Hollywood sequel.
Which I hope they don't.
Yeah.
Were all of – because I would argue if we can call that a boss fight, which it's not really a fight, but it is sort of a boss, you know
– conflict.
Conflict, yeah. Sure. There's one beforehand, which is kind of the one we are really invested in emotionally, which is the guy who burned his mother alive.
Yes.
I liked that fight.
Yeah,
I liked that. It felt like it was going to be a lot of exposition and talking to each other.
It was all business.
They had like one or two lines each, and then it was like, nah.
Mm-hmm.
I like that fight a lot. Yeah, me I think too. There was great use of creative shots with mirrors.
And the lighting in that.
Gorgeous. So that's good. When he comes out of the elevator, right?
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. Like, such distracting overuse of close-ups, but then such amazing cinematography in the third act. Mm-hmm. Like, it all comes down to choices.
Totally.
And the overuse, I think that's really what it was. But I Fair loved enough. All the color work and the, like you said, the mirrors. And just the whole way that was shot. Mm-hmm. And even in the beginning of the third act, where there was my favorite scene with the music playing, there was some really great overhead shots.
Totally were, yeah.
That were kind of stationary camera with everyone fighting, yes. And you just got a straight overhead look.
Synchronized swimming is what it made me think of.
Totally.
Which are great shots when those happen.
Loved that. And that was ambitious. And they only did it once.
Yes.
And it was like, cool. That was a fun choice. It worked great in that moment. Love that you sprinkled that in.
Yeah, fair enough. You got anything else on this film, sir?
I'm going to watch it again. 100%. I think Dev Patel deserves that.
Okay.
If nothing else from this critic, it's worth watching just because I want to give Dev the best possible chance.
Okay. Rank the following Dev Patel movies.
Okay.
This, Green Knight, Slumdog Millionaire. This movie.
Yeah, yeah. He's in a movie called This.
The Green Knight, Slumdog Millionaire, or Chappie. You remember Chappie?
Oh, God.
Which is, I don't remember. I don't think it was very good.
Chappie's at the bottom.
It is, right?
Yeah.
It's with also that like weird, like, what's that band? Die Antwerp?
Yeah.
What are they from? Antwerp. The Netherlands?
No, South Africa.
South Africa. You're right.
That's why it made sense in Chappie.
I don't remember why.
Or District 9. Was it District 9 or Chappie?
But District 9, the other dude who was the MC is in District 9, who is also from South Africa.
Yeah.
So I think that's a fair mix.
I think Chappie was set in South Africa too. But anyways.
Either way. Chappie's at the bottom.
Chappie's at the bottom.
Then Slumdog. This. Oh.
Then Slumdog.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then Lion. No.
I didn't even give you the option of Lion.
Then Green Knight.
Just Green Knight. I think you're at the end of the list.
Then Lion, number one.
Lion's not in the running.
Yeah, it is.
It's
my list.
I didn't ask you for that movie.
Well,
I'm going to double check Chappie here, but, by the way, Chappie was directed.
Shot in Johannesburg.
Oh, nice. Chappie was directed by Neil Blomkamp, who is like, I think worked with Dev Patel a lot.
Okay.
And Dev Patel originally had asked Blomkamp to direct this movie. And the Wikipedia page says the following about this, which is that, basically, he asked him, and Blomkamp was like, you should direct it yourself. Which can be taken a couple of ways.
Yeah.
I think it was taken in the spirit of like, you should do this. But you could easily be like, you should do that yourself.
Yeah.
I'm not interested.
You have fun with that.
Goofy. Okay. I think that concludes our thoughts on Monkey Man. I'm going to skip all the...
Why did you just become Kermit the Frog?
It was Shaggy.
Okay.
Once again, you've been listening to Fresh Hop Cinema, blah, blah, blah.
It wasn't me.
530-433-0839. I've been listening to Boombastic.
Zemipandastic.
I love that song. Johnny, read the stuff in the orange, would you?
Verve at Sedan.
I'm sure you have a reminder to our radio listeners.
Oh, yeah. As a reminder to our radio listeners. Funny enough,
wow.
If you want to hear the rest of today's conversation, which includes the always unpredictable Hot and Bothered.
Was wrong. All right. We'll be right back with another beer right after this fun sound. And John and I can clear up our confusion because I scrolled too far.
Word. So did
we got one more beer coming up.
I didn't think I had to do anything.
You didn't.
Okay.
That was my bad, but I appreciate you following my lead.
Yeah, man.
Don't go anywhere. All right, we got a juicy IPA on the table, 13.5%. And our confusion, aside from my mixing of genres of the beer, is gone. We have one whole more beer to talk about. And then we will get to Hot and Bothered and read you all the jargon.
Word.
But we've been off the air for a week, and I think we're entitled to a little bit of confusion when it comes to the notes.
Yeah, what are we, working hard? We're not paying attention.
What the heck's going on?
We're having a conversation.
Okay. Thanks for bearing with us. If you're listening on KZFR, you haven't been exposed to this for 7 years like our podcast listeners have.
Yeah.
You've only been for a couple.
Yeah.
So, Johnny, give me the skinny on this beer.
So, yeah, here we go. Another one from McElhinney Brewing. It is a bourbon barrel-aged Maltov special. It's a 13.5% barrel-aged Russian Imperial
Good
Stout.
Lord.
And let me wipe this can off. It's hard to read. There's condensation.
Yep.
All right. Here we go. Pale chocolate and chocolate rye malts emphasize rich fudge-like flavors and aromas. The freshly emptied 8 to 10-year-old bourbon barrels impart warm, toasty notes of oak, luscious vanilla with subtle hints of holiday spices.
We'll see.
Boom.
We'll see about that.
I like how they don't say what kind of barrel.
Yeah, I think that's always a move because there's some beers that'll be like, we've aged this in you know, port wine barrels and then moved it into
Pappy barrels.
Yeah, Blanton barrels or whatever.
Old Forester, yeah.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's like, you know, black velvet.
Yeah, it's
barrels or something.
10 high.
Yeah, right. Oof. Just like plastic jugs.
In Jim Beam barrels.
Well, I pulled this up on their website, and since we're on the radio, I can't tell you, sweet listener, how much a 4-pack costs, but Johnny, I can point to you with my cursor.
Mm-hmm.
So you and I can think about that on that scope. And I think
that's
a fair price.
That's like two combo meals from a fast food restaurant.
I think that's, which fast food, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I probably can't say that either.
Mid-tier.
But, sure, mid-tier. Yeah. Like not right off the freeway, but like a 2-minute drive off.
Exactly.
Jet black. Not much of a head going on. And actually, now that I hold it up to the light, not even jet black. Very dark brown.
Yeah.
Fairly liquidy, not very viscous just by looking at it. What are you tasting?
Thin.
Yeah.
But really good. Oh, that's nice. This is very reminiscent.
Oh, that's good.
That's very good, right?
That's good.
Reminds me a lot of Old Rasputin. Love that beer. Another Russian barrel-aged stout.
No, hang on. That can't be right.
I will just shh.
It's right.
Another great barrel-aged.
Straight up Rasputin is barrel-aged stout.
No, Old Rasputin is a Russian imperial stout. They make a couple barrel-aged versions of it.
I see. Okay.
But this reminds me of just like Old Rasputin, but it has a lot smoother vibes, smoother body.
Yeah.
A lot more sweetness and layers from that barrel aging. I do get a lot of the vanilla.
Ton of vanilla on the back end.
I love that.
Yep.
I really honestly kind of like the thinness. For like being a 13.5% beer, that is bananas.
That's a weird take for you too. I'm staying consistent with my personality and I don't like that thinness. That's super strange. I do like the flavor. It's way too carbonated for my taste. I would love some more viscosity. It has a ton of flavor that needs to have a little more body to sit right in this reviewer's mouth, I'd say.
I like that thinness because it does – I've had a few Old Rasputins within the last month.
Okay.
And that beer's just crashable.
Standard like, Rasputins.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I like that.
Which, by the way, is like also 9% or something. Is it 9?
Yeah.
9.9?
Maybe 9 flat.
Yeah, I think it's 9
Maybe
flat.
Maybe 10 flat.
I'll find it. It's not 10 flat. It's 9 something.
But I don't know why – I enjoy the thinness of this. Just typically, I would be very against it.
Yes.
I think it's just because it does remind me of that. And maybe I think Russian Imperial Stouts just aren't as thick as regular stouts. I've never had one that was like thick and chewy. I just don't think it fits that bill.
Yeah, maybe not. But then, you know, inevitably, whatever brewery is making that sort of standard Russian Imperial Stout then makes a barrel-aged version. And I feel like most of the time that barrel-aged version gets more clout than the traditional one.
Yeah, I've had a couple versions of barrel-aged Rasputin, and I remember it never being, like, chewy. Like, it was never, like, super thick. It was always on the thin side.
Yeah, and to clarify, Old Rasputin is 9%.
Sweet.
This is good. I've had one drink.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try some more.
I am a huge fan of breweries that barrel-age straightforward stouts. Just make a stout. Put it in a barrel, see what happens.
Sure.
You know, the stout-flavored stout, man, it is such a rarity these days.
Yes.
In the world of 37 adjuncts with maple syrup and Pop-Tarts and, you know, Eggo waffles and all that nonsense.
Eggo waffles?
I'm sure, man.
I'd be into that, to be honest.
Right, that'd be probably pretty good. I had Eggo waffle Pop-Tarts. Pretty darn good. I'm sorry,
what are you saying? You had a Pop-Tart flavored like an Eggo waffle?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
That's exactly what I said.
Like you bought that at the store?
Yeah.
Because now that you say it, a Pop-Tart between two Eggo waffles would be pretty good.
Imagine all that just in a Pop-Tart.
Wow.
Yeah. It was very good.
We should say that we're not sponsored by Pop-Tarts.
Yet.
Would love that. There's no conflict of interest in me saying, I don't know about that.
Pop-Tarts hit me up. But anyways.
It's all right, dude.
So in the world of the crazy adjunct stouts, I am a big fan of something more traditional. I love the straightforward stout flavors. I don't mind the lack of body on something that is trying to be more of a traditional style of stout, which is the Russian Imperial Stout. That's what it is, man.
Yep.
It's been around forever. It's never been super thick. So what happens when you put Russian Imperial Stout in a barrel? You get this. Tons of vanilla, soft edges, a little bit boozy, a lot of ABV. Like
it's a shocking level of ABV.
Yeah. Which, with the smoothness of the drinking experience coupled with that.
Yes. No, that's what I mean.
I'm loving that. Yeah. No, this is great.
What don't you like about it? Anything?
Not much.
Oh, like, this is winning you back over to the brewery.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Big time.
I don't know. It's a lot. I mean, there's a lot of flavor. There's not a lot of body. It's a tough dance to do.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a time and a place. And the time is 9 o'clock at night after a few light beers, and the place is probably in the safety of your own home or not having to drive because it's a sneaky 13.5.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I'm hesitant to go fully in the paint for this thing. but it is good.
Yeah, I get it. It's
but
too
it's
thin.
So circumstantial.
And it's too thin.
It is too thin.
Yeah.
And I would say, if I caught you on the wrong day, you would agree. And yeah. You'd be like, no, this is a downside.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. I think that's its number one flaw in that it is too thin, but that is not inherent to this style of stout. So I'm not holding that against it. Like, stylistically, this isn't anything that it shouldn't be.
That's true, but you still don't have to love that.
Yeah.
Or I guess I don't have to.
Yeah, that comes down to preference, you know, of one style of stout to another, you know?
Sure. We should also, and maybe we can put this on the docket for what we're talking to Brian McGillivray about. Because there's been debate, I will say, amongst very well-educated people, the difference between an Imperial Stout and a Russian Imperial Stout.
Yeah.
Some people seem to think that an Imperial Stout is a Russian Imperial Stout. Just a more concentrated version is the Russian Imperial.
Okay.
So we need to get some clarification. Either way, I would say objectively, this feels like a very, very flavorful, deceptively high ABV, pretty thin stout.
I would love to put this up against barrel-aged narwhal out of a can, the 16-ounce cans that you get.
What would you be wanting to compare?
Viscosity.
Barrel-aged narwhal is way thicker.
I don't think it is.
Really?
Yeah, I would like to go back and revisit that. I always thought barrel-aged narwhal was pretty thin.
Are you going to be back in the area to buy another can of this?
Probably within the next month or so.
If you remember, grab another one. We can do that comparison. We live in Chico, California, next to Sierra Nevada. We can do that. And if anybody holds us accountable, I will say, on record, this is going to be way thinner than that.
Cool.
And I'd if love I to. Am wrong,
yeah,
I will finish whatever has more left in the bottle when we do this comparison. And if you're wrong, you please do the same thing.
Deal.
I think we're getting to the point we should rate this.
Yeah. I really enjoy it.
Let me go first because I think mine's going to be a little bit lower. 7.
Okay.
What about you?
Yeah, this beer is like an 8.2 all day. It hit the 8s. I definitely would drive for it again. It is thin. So if you're looking for that big chewy stout, don't go for this. More traditional stout mouthfeel, upped the ABV, and some fun notes from the barrel, I think really give this beer unique character and a throwback kind of sensibility.
Fair enough.
So for those reasons, I like it.
Okay, I'm going to get this right this time. Once again, you've been listening to Fresh Hop Cinema, possibly and not definitely, on KZFR 90.1 FM. If you have feedback on anything we've discussed today, you can call or text at 530-433-0839. Again, our cell phone number here on the show, 530-433-0839. Or send us an email at fhccast@gmail.com.
As a reminder to our radio listeners, if you want to hear the rest of today's conversation, which includes the always unpredictable Hot and Bothered, or if you want to go digging through 7+ years worth of episodes dating back to 2016, head over to your favorite podcast app and subscribe to Fresh Hop Cinema.
Yeah, we'll be back in your ear holes next Saturday at 4 p.m. So until then, stream a great movie. Go see it at the Pageant. Go see it at Cinemark here at Tinseltown in Chico. Whatever it does for you, just do the thing that makes you happy with movies. Drink a good beer in the process. Whatever those things might be, please let them broaden your horizons in one way or another. And again, if you enjoyed the show, you can leave a tip for us or KZFR at kzfr.org. Please do enjoy the rest of your weekend. And to those of you currently cozying up by the fireplace or sipping a tasty, deceptively strong Russian Imperial Stout and listening in podcast form, we'll be right back with Hot and Bothered. Hot and Bothered. Welcome to Hot and Bothered, everybody. It's the portion of the show where we talk about what's been going on in our week and a half that we haven't talked to each other. Johnny, rapid fire style. Give me something.
Went to the range.
What is that?
Take a guess. What kind of range do you think I went to?
Either a cooking. Did you go to a cooking range?
No.
Okay.
Went to my kitchen. Went to the
gun
range.
Gun range.
Nope.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The range. Yeah. The range. Oh, home on the range. You went to a cabin.
Nope.
I think that's all I have. Is there something else?
Went to a driving range. Hit some golf balls this weekend. Range?
Oh, okay, sure.
Yeah, it's a good time.
A very common thing.
Yeah.
Sure, should have thought of it.
Yeah, never. I haven't been in 5-6 years. I used to go to the driving range all the time and smack balls around. It's a lot of fun.
Which one did you go to?
Nevada Bob's, just right here on the way to your house.
Nevada Bob. That's what that's called?
Yeah.
I've always wanted to go. How was it?
You've always wanted to go?
Well, yeah, like they serve beer and like.
Yeah, dude.
You do the Happy Gilmore drive?
No, I play it straight up.
Lame. How was it?
It was a blast.
Good.
I had so much fun. Me and Shalina went with patron friend of the show.
Oh,
Matt Satterfield.
Fair enough.
Yeah, we were having
that title.
He went to I should have said this at the fucking beginning of the show.
Yeah, probably.
Went to the movies with Matt and Ken.
Couple
Patreon homies.
Oh, nice. Actually, in that spirit, can we say that we also had a birthday this week that we didn't mention at the top of the show?
Yeah, we did. You edited it in, obviously. Psh, duh.
I didn't make it for radio people, and I'm not going to. So oh, no, shit. It was Ben Murray's birthday.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it was Ben Murray's birthday on the 16th.
Oh, God, that was a while ago.
Which actually, I'm all over the place. That's next week.
It's not the 16th yet, bro.
I'm going to edit that out.
Okay.
Great. Well, great. I'm glad you guys saw the movie together.
Yeah.
And yes, you should have given them a shout out.
It was a lot
earlier.
Of fun. And then, yeah,
get
we went
shit
out.
Shit together.
We went and grabbed a beer afterwards, talked about the movie, hashed some things out. And
where'd you get a beer?
Burgers and Brew.
Nice.
And I was going to go home. We're all going to go home.
Together.
No. And then I stopped at Burgers and Brew and texted Matt, he should come have a beer.
Nice.
And he texted me, I'm already having a beer at the Poorhouse.
The Poorhouse?
He's like, I wanted to have a beer, but I wanted to go home real bad, but I wanted a beer more. So I made it 400 feet to the Poorhouse.
Okay. Well, why not go to
he wanted lunch too. Path of least resistance.
Sure. I get that.
It's just right there.
What time did you see the movie?
10:30 in the morning on a Sunday.
Oh, you caught the 10:30.
Bright-eyed,
bushy-tailed. I tried to catch one of these. I saw it at 1:10, but
yeah. Was it a mistake? Probably.
How many drinks did you have beforehand?
The night before or the morning of?
The morning of.
Well, sir, we all found out like a bunch of fucking degens that they don't serve beer till 11 a.m.
That sucks. Well, you must have gone out after 30 minutes of the movie, right? You had to go get a drink.
No.
Oh, you just stayed in.
Yeah.
Even I had a White Claw today.
I should have.
For sure. Why would you not? It's a two-hour movie.
Yeah. Shoulda.
Did you get snacks or anything?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Popcorn, cherry Coke.
That's a morning move. For sure.
That's what I have for breakfast Sunday morning. Large popcorn, cherry Coke. But had a blast.
Okay,
and then we were at Burgers and Brew, dicing it up about the movie. One thing led to another. We went to the range and hit a couple buckets of balls, killed some White Claws. It was a good time. We should go.
They serve White Claws at the range?
Yeah.
Oh, dude, I'm in. How much are they?
The White Claws?
I don't care. We'll put it on the podcast.
$5.
Okay. That's a lot, actually, to be honest.
Yeah.
What's a six pack? $10?
Yeah.
But it's Can we smuggle it in?
I don't know. We sure. I mean, why not? Put some beers in your golf bag.
We should also go mini golfing.
That'd be fun.
Same neck of the woods.
We could just go regular golfing. They've got a 9-hole course behind that driving range.
Yeah. I think we warm up with mini golf. Slam some White Claws in the parking lot.
They've got
go roller skating.
A couple holes of little putt-putt there.
Yeah, well, so they got like 18 holes of putt-putt golf at the putt-putt golf course.
It's really fun to smash balls at the range. That was the whole point of that.
This is a family show. Please don't say smash balls. All right. I just got back from Oregon. Great time. You and I can catch up more about that if anybody wants to know specifics. I'll tell you at our bar hang on April 22nd. I've got one thing that I want to complain about, which is pretty rare, which is that, Johnny, you can see these boots behind me.
Yeah, those are your Red Wings.
These are my Red Wings, and I've had them for about 6 years, and you can see, like, they're sort of, I mean, they're due for a resole.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And I finally decided to hit up the Red Wing factory to take them up on their free shipping and their resoling package, which that second part's not free. And they came back to me, and they said they're not able to resole them because the insole is too cracked and dry. And I thought to myself, the whole point of buying these shoes is they will last you a lifetime.
Yeah.
Because they can be resoled. They're famous for their resolability.
They just sent them back?
They did. They said, we can't fix these. And I said to myself, you can't or you won't. And they didn't hear it. But
what does the insole have to do with the outsole?
They said the insole was, they don't, so basically, this is no good for podcast listeners.
Yeah.
But basically, the stitching comes out, right?
Yeah.
And then this is the outsole, this is the midsole right here. So they cut that off. And then what they do is pull all this top stitching off. And then they reattach to what's inside, which is sort of like a quarter inch of leather. And that's too messed up for them. So I guess they just replace that. I know, which is the thing that a lot of cobblers do. So I'm on a mission now this week to get these repaired.
There's a guy independent that works on Red Wings here in Chico.
Where?
Used to be in the mall.
Then I'll do some more research. Because I talked to one person. He was like, maybe we'll put some more leather over the insole. And I thought to myself, mm-mm. He didn't hear me.
Yeah.
Anyways, that really rubbed me the wrong way because I sent him out before this trip that I went on. And then I was hoping I'd have some sweet new boots when I got back. And they didn't even courtesy clean them. They're just like, take them back, you idiot.
Yeah, they're still dusty.
I know. And these are like my horse riding boots. Like, I don't know.
That's kind of shitty, man.
Pissing me off.
Yeah, they're supposed to. What's the goods of guarantee anymore?
I don't know.
What good's a guarantee?
Fix the boots or don't fix the boots.
Yeah.
You idiots.
Like, even if they would have replaced the leather that needed to be replaced and then charged you more and sent them back.
Right.
Like,
Fine.
They just do that. You sent me back dirty, useless boots.
I don't know what this does for you, but they also don't accept, like, they couldn't charge me more because I had to send a check.
Mm.
They don't take card. You have to stick a check in your fucking boot.
Well, they could have sent you an invoice.
I know. I don't, or like, hey, we're holding your boots hostage.
Yeah.
It's the only way.
There's a couple companies making boots like that out of like the Pacific Northwest, now that I've been curious about. There's like one out of Portland that makes some really sweet boots, and they have like a good guarantees. So
yeah,
might be worth looking into.
Anyways, that pissed me off.
Yeah, it's lame.
Tell me something good.
Dude, been playing this new game on PlayStation 5. It's my favorite game that has come with my PlayStation Plus membership in a while.
Yeah.
It's called Immortals of Avium.
Avium.
Or Avium. I think it's Avium.
Okay. Sure. What's the deal there?
So it's this like mishmash of action RPG mixed with first person shooter.
For people that aren't nerds, what does that mean?
So basically, you're playing in like a Lord of the Rings meets Star Trek
type universe. You're not doing yourself any favors. Yeah. For people that aren't nerds, what does that mean?
It's futuristic,
okay,
or possibly ancient times.
Okay.
There's wild technology. The whole premise of the game is instead of guns, you shoot magic out of your hands.
I love that.
Yeah, it's so fun.
It's great.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And there's three different types of magic, and you have three different wrist bracers that you can change.
Mm-hmm.
Like with a one button, they just quick change. And then you have three different types of magic you can shoot.
Okay.
And it's also a bit platformy. So you have like a lot of puzzles to figure out and things like that. Overall, fantastic game that I got for free with my monthly subscription. Dude. So been playing the heck out of that.
Sweet. It sounds like a game that should be on VR. Because I put you in that like sword and sandals game, right? Where you can do magic out of your hands and you have different magic types.
I don't know if your VR is at this point yet. Because this one is made exclusively for PS5. Like it's not even on the 4.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So I don't know. I haven't messed with the PSVR for the new games.
Right.
I don't know where they're at technology-wise with PS5 games.
I'll tell you, when I Googled Immortals of Avium VR,
yeah,
the first thing is a Reddit thing.
Would have been great.
Immortals of Avium would be great.
It on really
PSVR
would.
PSVR 2.
Yeah.
But fair enough. Yeah. Great, man.
It's a lot of fun.
You've finished Empire of the Damned.
Yep.
No. I'm like a couple chapters away.
I patiently await your arrival at the finish line.
I'm so stoked. I'm so jazzed on that book.
Mm-hmm.
Did you enjoy it?
Mm-hmm.
All right, great.
It's been great.
Me so happy.
Yep.
Anything else do you have for movies, beers, non those things this week?
Man, no. Only thing I've been doing besides playing video games and whatnot is watching Sopranos. I'm almost done.
You're still doing Sopranos?
I'm almost done. Dude, season 6, 21 episodes.
I don't know what that means. Is that a lot or a little?
Every season so far has had 12.
Oh.
Season 6 has
it's 20, a double season.
21 hour-long episodes.
175% more.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
So much.
Do you think the next season, are there 8 seasons?
No. Season 6 is the end.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. So we're almost done.
Make 7 seasons, you weenies.
Right?
Just make another season.
Divvy it up. I don't know. It might have been divvied up when it came out, but when I'm watching it now.
Do you have any shows that are coming to streaming? That's what I want to do on the show. Is like, you always talk about these shows.
Oh, Shogun. It's not finished yet.
No, you've talked about that. But like, for example, House of the Dragon is coming back on in the summer.
As well as The Boys.
That's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for like things I should get hyped for to stream.
I think it's in June. We're going to have the next season of House of the Dragon. We're going to have the next season of The Boys. And there's one more.
Rings of Power?
Yeah. No. That's not
coming out too.
It is. But there was one particularly... coming out in that month that I was jazzed on. I don't know. You're on the cuff here.
Yeah, off the cuff.
Whatever.
Sure.
Sometimes I want to be on the cuff.
On the line, off the cuff.
Yeah. I'll come up with some coming soon TV stuff.
Please do.
But we've been binging Sopranos and saving Shogun so I can watch it all at once because it's so good. And the plot is so dense with the politics and the interactions that like you kind of lose it after a week. So I'm very excited to watch that in sequence.
Great. All right. Well, this show wouldn't be what it is without the support of Bailey Minardi, everybody on Patreon. Johnny, do you have anything else by chance? I have a feeling you did.
I'm calling it now.
Okay.
Shogun wins an Emmy.
Do you follow the Emmys?
No, but I'm calling it.
Then you have to follow up on that call.
I will.
You leave me a voicemail later.
Okay.
That call.
I will.
Handlebar, Patreon, Bailey, etc. I'm Max Minardi.
I'm Johnny Summers. Be sure and drink some tasty beverages. Watch something that you find entertaining. And most importantly, be good to each other. We will be back in action next week, so we'll see you then.
This is Fresh Hop Cinema.